Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, a podcast all about following Watford Football Club. And Watford went up to Coventry City, where many Watford fans followed them and saw a six-goal thriller. A six-goal thriller. It wasn't one of those 4-2 ones. It wasn't one of those 6-0 ones. It was a 3-3 one. And, you know, you might see that as two different ways, a positive or a negative. My name's John, and with us this week on From the Rookery End is David.
Hello.
And also with us is Colin. Colin, you're right, Brigadier?
I'm very, very good, thank you, John. Yeah, very happy to be here.
Yeah, a bit of time in Devon, absence. A bit of time in out of were you out or in Mongolia?
Yeah. That's a good question. I'm not sure. It wasn't far from the capital, about 5 hours. So I think it was. I don't know actually. We were in the Orkhon Valley, the Orkhon Valley National Park,
riding horses.
Brilliant, riding horses. Yeah,
it looked sore awesome.
Bum. But yeah, the whole football thing doesn't really start for me until September. The seasons have got, you know, they start on the 11th of August now. I just find it very hard to kind of switch my attention to football in August because I love cricket and I'm watching the cricket on the telly and stuff like that. And I just feel like I can't engage with football. Also, the season ended so late as well. When was the cup final? In June, I think, for the first time in its history. So it just felt like I needed a longer break. But I was obviously following the Orns remotely, but not haven't been. That was my first game on Saturday. First thing to say, that is not a fun ground to go to. The outside of the ground is nice. They've got these kind of concessions all round it. It's a bit like the Amex. You can walk right the way around it. Inside, it looks like an airport hangar. It really hasn't got any kind of soul. And it's now called the Coventry Building Society Stadium. Why can't football grounds have normal names anymore? What's the Reading one called? The Car Park Stadium.
Is it something
the
standard like that, car park? Yeah.
Something like that. It's car like high, they used to play at Highfield Road. Now they play. Anyway, that's not my favourite ground. But a fun afternoon, John.
Good. And I'd say, as you left, Colin, again, 3-3, six-goal thriller. How are you feeling as you left your first game of the season? What were the vibes for yourself?
Well, I mean, it was just so. I went with Florence, so she hasn't been to Grange for ages. And as the game finished, she turned to me and she said, "Dad, that is the most championship football match I've seen in ever," because it was full of it had everything. I mean, it had some catastrophic defensive mistakes on both teams, from both teams, not just from our side. It had some real, there were some real quality players on the pitch to watch and enjoy playing. And I think the big difference from last season was that it felt like the team was coached properly, that it was balanced, and that they had a plan about how do you score goals in football? How is this team going to score a goal? They've got this new lad up front, the number 9, Rajovic, who has had a mixed reception after his, I mean, which I don't understand. Football fans drive him mad, don't they? 10 minutes against Blackburn, they're all writing him off. Anyway, come back to him in a bit. So suddenly it looked like we were balanced. We were good going forward, but we were making, we made mistakes at the back. But I mean, all in all, it was just like, oh, well, that's the sort of football I want to watch. I want to watch my team getting the ball down, getting it forward. I want to see fast wingers. I want to see crosses into the box. You know, I want to see some intricate play in midfield. We had Luzer and Deli Bashiru in there, Serrauta behind them, which, you know, really balanced that three in midfield, I thought. And then we had these outlets in Martins and Ince with proper support from the fullbacks. Andrews and Semmer were getting up to the halfway line to make sure that if they got the ball wide, they had someone that they could play off and then we could put the opposition under pressure. So it just felt very, very balanced. I came out feeling like, okay, so we've got 5 points from 5 games. Everyone's complaining, saying, you know, if we're going to go up, blah, blah, blah. I can't bear to think about the Premier League, to be honest with you. I'm looking at Sheffield United and them up the road and Burnley. And, you know, they are going to get hammered most weeks because the Premier League has changed so much since 2015. So I don't even want to think about that. I just want to watch a season of football where I feel like my team are committed to each other, to the coach, to the club, to the fans, and for the fans to be able to go to away games, which is not cheap, and enjoy watching some entertaining football, entertaining in the sense that there's some good quality talent on show, and entertaining also because of the kind of hiccups and Keystone Kops defending that we had to watch. Obviously, I think in most cases, when you have a team that, because obviously my first game of the season, if you've got good quality going forward, if you haven't got that, it's much harder to fix. fixing problems at the back, I would say, for a coach is a lot more straightforward. So hopefully where we're making mistakes like we did on Saturday, those can be fixed. But what we've got is a front five or six, which, you know, are starting to hum a little bit, I thought.
Yeah, because Dave, I was chatting to Lionel Burney on just text messages, and he said, you know, what you thought about the game, but he said they're far more likable as a team. I suppose that is what Colin's sort of saying. He wants those sort of fun moments. They are getting to be a little bit more likeable. Do you think you felt like that after the Blackburn game? Any sort of vibes were likeable? And did you like them a little bit more after the, you know, the performance and the fact that we went ahead three times, but they clawed it back?
Yeah. I think that's been the sort of theme of the season so far, hasn't it? Even from the first game. And even, you know, even after the games that, you know, we haven't won, whether we drew, you know, against Plymouth, or whether we, you know, the games that we lost against Stoke and Blackburn, I don't think there hasn't been as much negativity in the air. Now, partly that's because it's still August and, you know, Colin's not even looking at the results yet. So we're all still getting into gear. But also, I think we did have a bit of a, you know, a reset, a bit of a clean break in the summer. The squad has changed a bit, but there are still enough players around that we're familiar with it as well. And I think everything that Colin said is right in terms of there's obviously a plan. There's obviously positive intent. There is obviously a greater sense of discipline, as evidenced by the whole loser situation the week before. Ishmael Cutts a relatively impressive figure. And there hasn't yet been any sort of, you know, reason for us to be too upset. And I'm sure maybe that will come at some point further down the line, but
they will be upset and we will cry. Yes.
Yeah. It feels like we're trying to do things in the right way. And it's obviously not completely there yet. It's not coming off. No. You know, we had the problem going into this game was we haven't scored since the first game. Where are the goals going to come from? Great. You score three away from home, but then you make some mistakes. But I think the goals that we saw that we conceded on Saturday were, you know, they're two and a half individual mistakes of the three goals, and they're easier really to kind of deal with and cope with than if it was a structural deficiency. Mm, yeah. And Coventry were getting in behind every time, or there was something we were doing that was wrong in terms of our shape. If it's just a player making a bad error, bad decision, that does happen. And, you know, you do need to sort of impress upon them that that can't happen. But is football, and that happens.
Yeah. Let's talk about that attack, Colin, because three goals, first goal, but three goals since that first game of the season, and the fact that there were two changes up front. And what do you think those two sort of gave us a little bit? Rajovic with his first start after the big hype that we had last week at the home game with him being your new number nine. But also the son of the devil, Tom Ince, he is... And we know who he is and why I have a bad feeling towards him. In terms of that setup, what did you see different? Because I know you've watched some of the games on the television and stuff. What are you sort of seeing that really made the biggest difference, I suppose?
I think going back to what I said earlier, I think it's about balance. And when you've got a focal point, a proper one, Bio came on late in the game and actually contributed by being up front with Rajovic. But to begin with, we had Rajovic in the centre and we were playing an old-fashioned sort of 4-3-3, really, with two wide men and a Serralta in midfield who could sit and split the two defenders if the fullbacks went forward. So there was a real sense of organisation. But I have to say, I don't really understand Tom Ince's career, because watching him on Saturday, I mean, he looks like a class act. I mean, he looks like a proper player. He's certainly top half of the Championship level, if not potentially a Premier League player. I don't know how old he is, but he's been around for many years and he's gone from club to club. So I don't know whether that's a personality thing or whether he's had injuries or anything. But on Saturday, him and Martins looked, apart from their number 45, who I think is called Da Silva, who they've got on loan, they've got a player called Palmer, I think they've got on loan from Chelsea, who was also very good and gave Andrews a bit of a torrid time at fullback. But the R2 wide players really had an appetite to get the ball. They stayed right out on the touchline most of the time, really, really making the pitch wide for the Coventry defenders. And there was an appetite in the midfield to get the ball to them as well. And so the first goal, as I said earlier, it looked like there was a plan. This is how we're going to score a goal. We're going to get the ball to Tom Ince. Andrews is going to support him. Ince is going to try and get to the byline and try and cut it back. And Rajovic is going to be 2 yards from the goal and tap it in. Now, as far as I remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, we haven't really had a tap-in merchant. And even Troy wasn't really that. He didn't score a lot of goals from 1 or 2 yards out. But this guy is definitely that sort of player. He's going to get into that position. Once the ball goes forward, he's going to get into the box. He's going to get into the six-yard box. He's going to stay between the posts and he's going to pick up those scraps and score a goal. So, yes, he's a big lad. He's not that mobile. Hasn't, as far as we can see at the moment, not a brilliant like first touch, but he can hold the ball up okay. But what he has got is that real desire to get into positions where he can score goals. And he did that. Tom Ince got there, crossed the ball, and Rajovic beat the defender to knock it in. And he did pretty much, he was just in the right position again for the third goal, which obviously came from a Coventry error. But nevertheless, he was there. He was there to knock it in. And there have been times over the past few years where you get into a situation like that, there's nobody there. There's no one in the box. They're all on the edge of the box or they're looking to pass it. And there's no one that's like, just get in there, get it to him and let him try and score a goal. So from his point of view, I thought he had a very good debut. You can't ask much more from a new striker than that scores 2 goals, 2 tap-ins. He doesn't have to score wonder goals from outside the box. He can just get himself in there, cause a lot of trouble. And the first goal actually is quite a good finish if you look at it, because it's in midair.
And he slips over beforehand.
Yeah, and he manages to get up and get the ball, get his foot in front of the defence. So, yeah, I thought he was good. But Martins and Ince both really impressed me. Obviously, Martins' goal was the highlight of the whole game as far as I could see, because I think it was Deli Bashir who had 3 men round him, and he managed to ping the ball out to Martins. And by then, they'd taken off their number 3, who had really dealt with Martins quite well. He'd been substituted. Suddenly, Martins had the freedom of Coventry. He was able to cut in on a diagonal run, and they were backing off him, thinking he's going to pass. Rajovic again, arriving at full pelt in case there's a pass there for Martins. Martins he takes a half step, puts it on his right foot, and pings it in, and it was just pure quality. So, from that point of view, that was exciting. It was great to watch Watford scoring goals, the sorts of goals that we want to see getting scored. It looks like there's a plan to get it wide, get to the byline, cut it back. That causes defences. They're running back towards their own goal. There's all these things and that midfield of Loser and Deli Bashir seemed to work pretty well, functioned pretty well.
It's that thing, though, Dave, that we've seen talk about, last week, having seen pretty much that set up at the end of the game, would it be adopted? Would he sort of go with it, especially this game? It's the last game before the international break. Would these players start? But it felt good and it felt right last week. And it sort of has that lovely blend a little bit. I like the fact that Ince has that sort of senior head. 31, by the way, Colin.
Is he really? Sort of, good Lord.
It balances, I think, that the age and the experience, where last week with Asprilla, it just felt very, very raw.
Yeah, Asprilla is clearly, arguably our most talented player. And I think possibly the player with the highest ceiling of all the players out there. Maybe Martins might have something to say about that. But it did feel a bit like when you had all of them on the pitch at one time, you had Loser, you had Asprilla, you had Martins, you had Chakvetadze, that they're all sort of cancelling each other out and trying to do similar things. And they want to get on the ball. And, Kone was in there as well. And they all want to be in similar positions and dribble and cut inside. Whereas I think Ince, from the bit I saw against Blackburn, and obviously, it seems like he did this against Coventry, he kept it a bit more simple, just got the ball, just knows when to knock it down the line and chip one in, knows when to come inside. He's experienced, he's a goal scorer. He's got a decent amount of assists across his career. Certainly recently did all right in that respect at Reading last season. So that's useful. I think he's been one that, because he didn't start the season in the team and he had to get fit, and there's sort of, he wasn't a signing that anyone got massively excited about. But actually, I think it's sort of, hopefully it will prove to be a bit of a, great bit of business for us, really. Because I think he will bring something to that team that we don't have in other areas. And maybe he will enable some of the more exciting players to develop and, they can learn off him as well. But it was good to see them start. I like the fact that Rajovic fell over, as you said, before the first goal, but managed to still get up in time And actually calling it a tap-in did it a disservice, I think, because he is a good bit of movement to go from sort of back post to near post and get in front of the defender and get, you know, angle his body and his foot in to get the ball in, you know, and he was sort of right place, right time for the third as well. So, yeah, and I like the fact that he, after the game, he said that he called the penalty box his office.
Did he?
Oh, I didn't know. Didn't
figure out yeah.
I love that.
Just hoping he doesn't do a Zoom call from it or work remotely. But let's look at the. I've been waiting to not do it and not want to talk about it. But we talked last week, Colin, how, you know, we weren't negative towards the defence. Who didn't have as the impact last week? He had a different sort of impact this week. But defensively, how did that feel for you looking at them at the stadium? There you go. That says it all. The noise. But it's, which is really interesting because that's not how we felt about them until this week.
No, I think it's clear that Ishmael, what do we call him, Ishmael? Or do we call him Mr.
Valerian?
We call him Gaffer. The Gaffer. I think there's clearly an idea that he's Valerian. Okay. So I think he's trying to develop a style of play. And it has a philosophy. So, interestingly, at the other end of the pitch, I noticed something that I've never seen before. And this is clearly a coaching thing. So, when the Coventry keeper had the ball, our players would press the defenders, but no one would press the keeper. So, a bloke next to me screaming, press the keeper, press the keeper. But it's quite clever because the keeper's standing there. He's got the ball. He's going to have to move the ball on at some point, but he's got no defender to pass it to. So, instead of committing another player forwards, onto the keeper and letting the keeper then just pass it off to someone open. He's got no one open. So he's having to try and chip it into midfield or knock it long, which suits us because you've got a much higher chance of winning the ball back and building. But at our end of the pitch, it's clear that he wants Backman to come out of his box quite a lot. And he did it on two or three occasions, it was lucky he was there because balls broke on us and he was able to clear them because he was 20 yards out from the line. And had he been on the line, they would have been 1-1. So that's something. But there's a lot of Backman passing it to someone under pressure. And it happened with Tom Delibashiru twice. And Delibashiru just wanted to knock it back to him, but he didn't knock it back in a very healthy way. And so that we put ourselves under pressure because at the moment we still haven't quite mastered the idea of playing out from the back. Now, if I was going to play us next week and I'd watched that performance against Coventry, I would be saying to my team, right, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have a high line and we're going to press the living daylights out of Watford's back line because they don't look at all comfortable on the ball when they're trying to knock it around. So that's a worry. The three goals that we conceded all came from mistakes. The first one doesn't look like a mistake because it's a sort of almost miraculous free kick that just dives under Backman's hands at the post and goes in. But the free kick came from Porteous passing the ball under, he's under no pressure, passed the ball straight to a Coventry player who starts his run. Serrato comes across and fouls him. And from that free kick, they score. Porteous also gave away a pen, which I think was a bit harsh, frankly, because he turned his back and his arm wasn't in an unnatural position, but the referee gave it. But it was saved, so it didn't matter. And then, obviously, there's the own goal. Now, I agree with Dave. These things happen in football. They occasionally happen. The thing that worried me about the Hoot own goal, is manifold. One, he wasn't under any pressure. He was under no pressure. He wasn't being pressed. So he could easily have... we were 2-1 up at the time. He could easily have played it forward, even if it's just a speculative ball into a channel. Just clear the danger. He doesn't do that. He turns without looking, and boots it towards Backman, and he hits it really hard. Now, there's no one on Backman, so Backman's not under pressure. What he has to do is roll it back to him, but he actually shoots. And I remember when I was 6, 7 years old playing football, I was a left back. Said, if you pass back to the keeper, make sure you don't pass it within inside the posts. So if he doesn't get it, goes out for a corner. Oh, well, defend the corner. Don't knock it towards the actual goal. So he made 3 mistakes. 1, he didn't look. 2, he hit it too hard. And 3, he put it between the posts.
I've just been watching the highlights back. I've got them in front of me now. I mean, first of all, you are right. Like who shouldn't be passing it back that strong? And, you know, we all know, if you can avoid it, don't pass it between the sticks, you know, get it out wide or whatever. But there is a Coventry player who's pressing him and he looks up. He looks up and he's you know, your two options, you would think, is a ball down the line, as you said, but there's no one there, or a ball inside. The player that's inside is Ken Semmer, who's come inside from left back and is nowhere. He's not providing him an option to pass the ball. So he has to go backwards. You know, of course, he could have just punted it up the line, but clearly they've been told not to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
To retain the possession. So Semmer has not inverted enough, not come deep enough to get the ball. Don't know where the midfielders were. And then he passes it back to Batman too strong. But he does make a move with his body. When he, just as he's receiving the ball, he puts his arm out and looks at Batman to say, you know, give me an option.
It's coming.
Yeah. And Backman obviously doesn't move quick enough or isn't in the wrong position. Yeah, the pass is too strong. He doesn't look. He could have taken an extra touch. And it does speak to this teething problems we're having with this system. And I think it's been coming. We all knew that a goal like this was going to go in at some point. We all kind of thought it would be Backman giving it away or something. And in the end, it's kind of, you know, it's not quite that scenario. But it is a product of this new system we're playing. They're getting used to it, you know, and it's happened. And hopefully they'll learn from it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't want to put the guy under. I think the biggest thing was he hit it hard and he hit it straight at the goal instead of just out wide, where you know that. And that's a silly error. And then the third goal, again, we'd gone to a three at the back / five at the back by that stage, with Pollock had come on. And so Portis was kind of chasing a guy out wide. He did get a hand in the face, but whether it was bad enough for him to go down in the way he did, I don't know. Then Hoot got pulled out of position because he felt like he should come across and try and help out. And then the ball came in and Pollock was a bit slow, maybe a bit slow. It's a bit harsh to blame him. He tried to come out and block the player and he didn't manage it. And in the end, it's a decent strike and it's a good goal. But you just feel that they're all if Portis could have stayed on his feet. You remember the Hollabass one when he went down howling because he had a finger in the eye? Do you remember that? And I can't remember who it was against now. It was at Vicarage Road and they scored. It was a little bit like that. It's like, was it? Okay. It's like, just try and stay on your feet. Okay, it's jabbed you in the eye. That's not right. But you know this ref. It's 90-some minutes. It's like, he's not going to give it. So if you go down flailing and going, oh, I've got a head injury, the ref was having none of it. So it was frustrating because all three goals are really avoidable. But as David says, he's clearly trying to develop a way of playing which will allow us to keep possession and control midfield and control the game. But at the moment, my worry is this. It's fine having a philosophy if you've got the players that can carry it out. But if you haven't, then you've either got to change the players, which we can't do now, or you change the philosophy. And my worry is that I don't know that if those players have got that the kind of ability necessary, close control, kind of calmness, passing ability to really make that a good, you know, a very positive thing. Do it sometimes, but if we're going to try and do it all the time, I think we are going to get caught out at times. But, you know, we'll see. As we all know, it's a developing side and and this coach is not under pressure. I feel like the club have stepped away from the coach and just said, right, off you go. We've given you a decent squad. Now you do what you need to do. You're in charge. And I feel positive about that. I like what he says. I like the way he talks. I like, obviously, the fact that he's a proper disciplined coach. Although we've had coaches before that people like Bilic, you thought would be quite disciplined, but maybe with this group of players, it's different. And I tell you, the one thing that really pleased me, John, at the end of the game was one that we didn't give up. Even at 3-3, Asprilla had a wonder shot, which swerved, and the keeper did very well to save it. And it was a hell of a good save because it swerved last sort of metre. It started to swerve away from him. I like that. I like the fact that when the third goal went in, Luz had practically had an apoplectic fit on the pitch, screaming at people. Serralta was having a go at Hooton. I like the idea that the players are, rather than just shrugging their shoulders, going, oh, well, conceded again. 3-3, that's not so bad. They were actually look like this idea that Valerin has been talking about creating a winning mentality, having the idea that you don't give up, you try and win the game at all costs, you keep going, you keep fighting, you fight for each other. That seemed to be more in evidence than anything I saw last season. So that's encouraging. It makes you want to go to the next game. It makes you want to, you know, sing and shout and get involved rather than, you know, going to Vicarage Road at the end of last season was just, everyone was just like, it was like a, it was, It was like...
We remember, like Colin. It's not that long ago.
It was like a doctor's surgery for people who are just chronically depressed. It's like, who next, please? So this feels better. It just feels good. Mm. It feels like no one's talking about getting back to the Prem at the moment. No one's focusing on that. Obviously, there are the naysayers on social media, but let them get on with that. I just thought I enjoyed my afternoon, and I haven't done that for a while. So, yeah, good on you, Valerian.
The other thing, but you know, Valerian does have his desires. Dave, he likes to make lots of substitutes all at once, and he did it again. And it's, I find it not fascinating, but I go, ooh, I wonder if that was why that panic, that options that were open to Hood. I think, when you look it back in those moments, I want to see the whole pitch sometimes, and I can't see the whole pitch. You know, because at 57 minutes, he did make several substitutions, which might have impacted on that. 57 minutes, he took off players who would have been options, not necessarily direct options for him, but the right-hand side had completely changed. Ince had gone off, Andrews had gone off. But also the fact that Tom Delebashiru in the middle had gone off. And you sort of go, maybe that was the thing that spooked him a little bit. But you're not, you sort of come across to me, Dave, you're a fan of making all these changes. I think early on, the first few games of the season, it just felt like just need to get people on to get them fit because not a lot of them have played many minutes for a while, or at least for Watford. But do you think it is fitness? Do you think it is just because, just purely, is it a worrying thing? Or is he just trying to make them maybe a bit more competitive and have a team, a wider choice for his squad decisions?
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to the game state and the situation on the pitch. When you're chasing the game, in the age now that we have five subs available to us, then why not make a triple change, change the midfield, change, you know, you're changing a big percentage of the team. You know, this is a kind of new thing, really, in the last few years of football where coaches are having to learn and to adapt to this. This is previously, you wouldn't make a triple substitution on 57 minutes because what if your centre-back or your goalkeeper gets injured, you're 10 minutes later and you're stuffed. So it's sort of a new part of the game that we're sort of seeing and we're seeing different coaches use it in different ways. And it is, you know, I don't particularly like it, really. I think it's, you know, five subs each, I think, spoils it a bit. But I understand the reasons it's been brought in. But I don't think you should just do it necessarily every week just because you can. I think you should do it when the time is right. So we'd just gone 2-1 up, not long gone 2-1 up at that stage. And then you make three subs and you make, you know, you're taking off Ince and Delebashiru and bringing on Chakvetadze and Asprilla. And then you bring, you know, you're doing a like-for-like at fullback, which is kind of, that's fine. But even though I think Andrew's a better player than Ngakia, but whatever, that's fine. Change the fullback, give him some fresh legs. But you're bringing on two attacking midfielders for a winger and for a sort of, you know, a bit more of a steady midfielder in Delebashiru, and you've just gone 2-1 up. I don't, you know, that's quite bold. And maybe you wanted to press home the advantage and get another goal. But, you know, maybe he should have kept, could he have kept it more steady? Could he have done something different? I don't know. It's easy to say in hindsight, isn't it? But, you know, I like the sort of boldness of it. I like the fact that he's prepared to be confident. He's prepared to use his options. And I like the fact that we've got options. It's good that we've got players who can come on to the pitch, off the bench, and can impact games. But you shouldn't just do it by default every single game, to be honest with you. You know, so I think it's just got to be done at the right time. And again, I mean, like, Cole, you'll know better than I. You were at the game. I don't know whether those substitutions actually did impact the game, because the goals, as we said, were mistakes. But on paper, it looks, you know, it looks quite a bold move that maybe didn't come off.
I mean, it was peculiar because we were 2-1 up and we were really very much in control of the game at that point. We'd scored a goal. It was 5 minutes later. The trouble is, they're not like for like. So Delebashiru sat in the middle and was more, you know, playing with Serralta, trying to control that central area. And Luza was flitting around a bit more. But when Chakvetadze came on, he's a Jack Russell. He just wants to get everywhere. He wants to shut players down. He committed a couple of fantastic fouls straight away. He's like, hello. And they're all like, blimey, it's a bit late in the game for this. He just went in at sort of ankle height. So, and he uses his body well. And he's an exciting player. And I think when he came on against Blackburn, it was like, oh, someone's come on the pitch, someone with a bit of presence. But he wasn't going to do the job that Delebashiru had done, which, you know, you could argue, well, what did he really do? But it's like, well, he's just doing the things that midfielders sometimes have to do to make sure that they can control that area of the pitch. And Chakvetadze is not going to do that. And Asprilla is not going to stay out wide on the touchline in the way that Ince did, received the ball out wide, stretched the defence, tried to get inside. He's also a little dynamo that wants to come in into the channel or get into that number nine position. He wants to get shots off. And it just changed the way we were playing, because it's three players all at once. It's like it wasn't necessary. Unless Ince said, I can only give you 60 minutes, I don't want to pick up a hamstring injury. And we had a lot of muscle injuries last year, so maybe that's something to think about. I don't really understand the Ngakia for Andrews. If he prefers Andrews and wants to start him, he's a kid. Let him play 90 minutes. He'd had a tough time in the first half because Palmer was giving him a run around, but he handled him okay. Palmer faded quite badly and was moved into a central position in the second half. And suddenly Andrews was getting forward more, and he just didn't look like he was struggling, and he certainly didn't look like he was tiring. So it seemed kind of weird to change one whole side plus one of our steady midfielders at a time when we were in control of the game. But I'm sure he has his reasons. It may well be to do with how many minutes he thinks a player's got in him. You know, Arsene Wenger famously had a sports science department that had a kind of green, amber, red. And just like before a game, again, he's in the amber, you know, he can't play more than 60, 65 minutes. And he would abide by that, Wenger. So maybe there's a bit of that going on. But it seemed, if we were 2-1 down, it's like, okay, bring on players that you think might make a difference going forward. But actually, we were in control. So it was strange. And then the later substitutions, I felt, were even stranger. Because he had Serralta on the pitch. If he wanted to go to three centre-backs, why doesn't he just say to Serralta, just come back in and I'll put someone in front of you? But he takes him off and brings on Pollock. So that was who we know is a wholehearted young man, but I don't believe it has the sort of quality that the other three centre-backs at the club have currently. So that seemed a bit odd. So I'm with Dave. I think there are times when he just thinks, well, I've got five subs, so I might as well use them. And I can save legs, and that will be good. It's a long season, but it's just before an international break. It's like we were in control. So why would you make those changes and slightly destabilise the team and the performance? I don't think you can. I think you'd struggle to claim that the own goal was a result of those substitutions. But it's just suddenly it's different. Suddenly players aren't where you expect them to be. A different player's on the pitch. You know, you're looking out to the right wing because you're expecting Ince to be there and you're expecting Andrews to be pushing up to the halfway line. You look out there and Ngakia is on the 18-yard line and Asprey is somewhere in the middle. So you're like, okay, what's happened? Who do I, you know, we'd got into a nice pattern of passing. They were struggling to cope with us in lots of ways. We had the quality up front. And he changed it. But again, I don't want to criticise him. I'm sure he had lots of reasons to do it. And I'm sure that fitness and getting players into that idea that they are part of his plan, that they can compete to start, all of those things are positive. But unfortunately, on Saturday, I think he did it too early and he did too... If he just brought on Ngakia for Andrews or just brought on Chakvetadze for Deli Bashiru, just one substitution that maybe just changed things slightly... Then you go, okay, one substitution, a team can cope. They go, okay, I understand what's happened. We can adjust to that. When you do three at once after 57 minutes, it changes the dynamic. And I think it's hard for the players on the pitch to really get how the team has changed and very quickly pick up on different patterns and different positions. So I'm not sure that three substitutions at 57 minutes was necessarily a good idea.
Dave, we mentioned it. Colin mentioned it. Gino, how do you think he's looking at these first few games, the first five games of the season? We know we can give all our opinion all we like, but it actually only matters one man's opinion on things. What do you think he's thinking at the moment?
It's impossible to say, isn't it?
Let's imagine. Okay, firstly, give me a happiness level from 10 being absolutely joyful, which you could probably only get if you win every single game by at least three goals, I think, to get 10 out of 10. Where do you reckon his happiness level is?
Well, here's the thing. This is just off the top of my head, but I think we've got less points now at this stage than we did last season.
Yeah. Yeah, it must be.
I think we'd won a couple, didn't we? And look what happened. I hope that he is sort of part of this slight shift in culture, although I, you know, don't hold out too much hope that that's the case. But if we're feeling a bit more positive about things, I hope that transfers to him when he's at Vicarage Road and he can feel it. And he's obviously at the training ground and he will see the situation with Ishmael and the discipline and this, that and the other. You know, I don't think we should be naive. We shouldn't expect everything to have changed overnight. You know, Gino is still Gino and there will be tests to come. There will be hurdles in terms of our form that, you know, hopefully he will overcome and he won't do his go revert to type, but we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, I think if we are feeling positive, then I'm sort of fingers crossed he's feeling positive too. But it's, you know, it's the international break, which in past seasons has been danger zone for managers. I would be astonished if we saw a change in this international break. But the one in October, if we haven't made progress, significant progress by the one, you know, a month later, that might be a more of a testing time. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
What do you think would be significant progress? Just, I don't know how many games are in between it. Let's say there's five.
Look, I think we need to win a few more games. And I think Ishmael has spoken himself about the need to go on a run, to put three or four wins together in a row. And then all of a sudden your fortunes improve quickly and you move up that table and it looks a lot better. So I think we need to do that. We didn't do that last season. We do need to do that this season. And I think we are seeing that the building blocks are in place for that. It has been a reset. We are taking us hopefully a slightly more, if not long, then a medium-term approach to things. But, of course, he needs results. We can't just have the whole season where we go, oh, this is good, isn't it? We're doing the right things, but we're not winning enough football matches.
Do not scratch your ears. You're listening to From the Rookery End.
As you know, we're trying to help and support and show a little bit more off about Watford Women on the podcast this year. There'll be another edition of our Women's Focus podcast in a few weeks' time. But, of course, they played another game this weekend. Second game of the season away, this time at London City Lionesses. I suppose at some point or another they were associated with Millwall. And Kieran was following it as Watford Women visited the London Lionesses.
So it was a narrow 3-2 defeat for Watford's women. But on another day, Damon Lathrop's team could have been coming away with 3 points against one of the strongest teams in the division. He said in his post-match interview that London City simply punished some of Watford's mistakes. And if you look at the goals that London City scored, two of them have come from Watford errors. And the three goal scorers for London City were all contracted to WSL clubs last season. So Watford have learned very quickly, if you make errors or if you make stray passes, they will be punished in this division. But what's really positive, if we look at the first two games, Watford may only have 1 point. But what they have shown in the step up from the third tier into the second is that they have been very, very competitive. A draw at home against Durham was not a bad start, considering Durham's experience in the division. And then to go to London City, who, as I outlined, have signed a number of players with WSL experience, even had players, including Ruisha Littlejohn, who were at the World Cup in Australia and New Zealand recently. Watford have gone there and outplayed them. So Damon Lathrop, although will be frustrated with the errors that Watford have made in that game, will no doubt be encouraged by the fact that, number one, his team has been competitive. Number two, he has a player clearly in Carly Johns, who scored her second in two games, who has made the step up and can score goals at this level. And number three, has a team who have not been overawed by the step up to a semi-professional competition. So while they only have 1 point on the board, Watford have to be encouraged by the start that they've made, because while the results don't necessarily reflect the performances, as long as they keep that confidence, as long as they keep performing, they will no doubt be able to pick up more points. What will be really key is the availability of their players and keeping everyone fit. We saw in this game against London City changes made. Katie Reid and Michelle Adjumang came into the starting lineup along with defender Abby Lafayette. Now, Adjumang and Reid were unavailable for the game against Durham because, as outlined in our preview podcast, they are on dual registration contracts. So they, unlike a loan where they are available every game, they will only be available to Watford when not required by Arsenal, their parent club. So we may well see the likes of Katie and Michelle in and out of the side over the course of the season, but they will no doubt add quality and no doubt did add quality in that game. But the key thing will be is how much are they going to be available over the course of this season and the contributions that they make. But certainly, despite the defeat, plenty for Damon Laffrope to be encouraged by. Wipe out those mistakes that they saw in the game, and hopefully we will start to see some Watford wins. Come on, you golden girls.
A podcast by Watford fans, for Watford fans. This is From the Rookery End.
The transfer window is closed. Thank goodness. It's not my favourite time of year. All the chat that gets waylaid by these transfer rumours and possibilities. I'm more of a man. I want to see substance. I want to see what's happened and I want to see how it impacts things. And I suppose we are starting to see things. Dave, any disappointment whatsoever that we didn't sign five players last Thursday on deadline day?
No, we were never going to sign five players.
No.
But I do think we have left ourselves slightly short. But it doesn't feel to me like that we were. It's not like we've missed out on a certain player, or that you know, there was a deal that we didn't get over the line. For whatever reason, it appears that they were quite relaxed and comfortable with the situation. Although Ishmael, in his press conference, I think he sort of alluded to the fact that we maybe would like another left-footed centre back. But he said that thing that managers always say: you know, if something presents itself on deadline day, then we'll do it. But I mean, how does that work? I was just going to turn up and just go, oh, all right, yeah, great, actually, we'll do it. I think centre-back is the issue, really, because there's only four of them, and Sierra has been injured already, and he's not even playing at centre-back. He's playing in midfield this season. Pollock has mentioned the jury very much out as to whether he's ever going to be a sort of top half or above championship centre-back. And centre-back is the one position on the pitch, I suppose, with the exception of goalkeeper, which is a separate thing. But it's one position on the outfield position that you can least afford a crisis at. I think in other positions, players can do jobs in certain positions. Like we've seen, Ken can play left back. You can kind of get round. Even the best teams, like when Liverpool had all their centre backs out a few seasons ago and they had Fabinho and Henderson playing centre back, everything just went to pot. Like it's such a specialist position. People can't really fill in because of the height thing and just the positioning and everything. So if we do have a few injuries or a suspension, you know, there could easily be a situation where we don't have two fit centre-backs because we've only got four of them and Sirialta doesn't have a great record with injuries anyway. So another one would have been good, even just for cover alone or someone from Udinese. I don't know what the youth team options are like. Maybe they'll have to be called upon. Maybe there's someone that could come in and impress us. But apart from that, I think, you know, relatively pleased with the transfer business that we've done in the window. We got most of it done pretty early. And they've all looked pretty good to a certain extent when they've come on the pitch. You know, some made more impact than others, but generally pretty good.
What I found interesting is the fact that it actually feels more of a hit already. Like, not a hit, but, you know, it feels like there's an element of the players they've bought for reasons are doing the job that they bought them for. But also, we got a tweet from Dunstable Town under 15s. I don't know if it's one of the players or it's one of the coaches. So I said, how do we feel about this transfer window? And I was like, well, we'll talk about it on the podcast.
Just and they're a Watford fan, are they? Dunstable Town, this guy?
I'm assuming. He follows us, so I'm assuming. Okay. But he sort of says...
Behind enemy lines.
But he says, the squad, do you honestly think we have... what we have is going to push us forward? Now, my big thing is, and it's the biggest thing I took from that meeting with Gino, where Scott Duxbury very clearly said, Watford are an EFL club. We are an EFL club and we are top 30 clubs in the country. So I had no expectations, Colin, at all of anything dramatic being paid out for or some amazing signing coming in. The only ones I knew about are the old ones, you know, Livermore and Tom Ince. And they're the old ones. How did you feel, I suppose, beforehand, going into this transfer window and the summer business and stuff and knowing who left and who, what we might need? How do you feel about that job?
Well, I think they've done something quite miraculous. Obviously, losing Pedro and Sarr, Pedro more than Sarr for me personally, and other people might feel differently, that you're losing two quality players. So that obviously is something that you have to... You're looking to see if there's similar quality coming in. So that was a worry. But actually, it's just the pure number of players that they've actually managed to move on. And I think a lot of clubs would like to be able to do that when they've got kind of, look at Chelsea, for instance. I mean, they have had a massive clear up. But if you look at the players that have left, Pedro Sarr, Truce to Kong, Hungbo, Sombolonga, Gaspar, Okoye, Quina, Cabaselli, Fletcher, Joao Ferreira, Craig Cathcart, Dan Gosling, Tom Cleverley. These are all players that were here last season and now they're not. So what that does, I think, and a lot of those obviously were considered starters or possible starters, certainly in the match day squad. So that's a lot. I mean, there's others, some of whom were on loan and now aren't with us anymore, been around for a bit. But so there's a lot more. I mean, you can go and look at the list on Transfer Market. You know, there's quite a few. Obviously, Arujo is another one that didn't work out for us. He was on loan, so he's gone. So suddenly what you've got at the training ground is a lot less cars and a lot less people.
Everyone's happy because they can find a car parking slot.
Yeah, there's just a lot more air. I think there's a lot more air at the club. So when you've got a player like Ryan Andrews, he thinks, I'm never going to start because there's Jeremy Ngakoue. He can't even start. So you've got this Portuguese chap. So he's gone. So that's create. Maybe it helps to create better, healthier competition amongst a squad of players, a smaller squad, slim down. You think I've got a good chance of getting games. I think bringing Martin, I mean, the thing about Martins is that when he was with us before he went off on loan, he looked like, yeah, there's something there. I can't quite see what it is. He was playing on the other side of the pitch as a right winger. They've moved him over to the left. So like very, very fashionable at the moment to have inverted wingers. But he looks like a totally different player. He looks confident. He just looks more grown up. He looks more determined. He looks like he knows exactly what he's going to do when he gets the ball. That wasn't the case before. So if we've lost Sarr, who, you know, for the last couple of years has been a bit of a, you know, a bit of an incredible sulk at times when things didn't go his way. This guy's not like that. He's a bit more like Pedro. He's got that forward thinking attitude. So I think that's a space we've filled with a player that you could argue has the potential to have the same quality as the player that's left. And we've brought in some experience and we brought in a proper centre forward who can actually score tap-ins to get himself into positions where he can score easy goals. So that feels like a positive, but it's a much, much slimmed down squad. So there must be more, this is a slightly nebulous phrase, but there just must be more air around everybody. Yeah. You know, if you're looking at 35 players in a canteen, you're like, blimey, there's a lot of footballers here. How do you, and as a coach and a coaching staff and an ownership model, how do you manage them?
Thin air can't play centre-back. That's the issue.
But I would say this. One of the things that happened on Saturday, which was really interesting for me, because I've watched Bayo play quite a lot, and he seems a little bit light and a little bit like you're not quite sure what sort of forward player he is. But he came on and he played up front with Rajovic. And that led to the third goal. So that was an interesting development to see the Crow in a position where he's got a mate next to him who is solid and strong and physically present. So again, you think maybe the purchase of Rajovic will help Bayo contribute more to the team as well. So it feels healthier. There was a lot of dead weight, clearly, as I've read out half the list of people who left. Obviously, those are the ones that most people will remember. That's a lot of players to move out. And I do think that creates space for young players, for new signings, and perhaps even makes us more attractive because you think, oh, well, there's a pathway now. There aren't seven players in front of me. So for me, it feels like it's not really a transfer window as such. It was, as David said earlier, a proper reset. Like 15 players have left the club or something like that. And maybe 8 or 9 have come in. And, you know, obviously, like with all transfers, some will work out quickly, some will take longer, some won't work out at all. But at the moment, it feels like there are players in positions that they need to be in, but we are like a dominant. Well, I mean, I don't know. Are we? I thought Hoot was the answer. And I thought that Porteous looked like he was going to become that. But we are missing, we're missing a real quality centre back, I would say. But
yeah,
they're not.
Well, I don't think that
as backup, maybe. But
yeah, backup is what we probably needed. Someone else just to be there, just another capable deputy. They're clearly the best two that we've got. They're clearly the number one choice. They're forming a decent partnership. I think Hoot's been very good. He was man of the match 2 games ago and everyone was raving about him.
Exactly. So, yes.
A couple of sort of slightly unfortunate errors for goals and involvements in goals. Porteous, wholehearted. Everyone likes him. Again, you know, they're sort of, he's a bit of a younger player, sort of less experienced than Hoot. They're going to make mistakes. They're as you said, John, we're a championship team. It's to be expected. But I'm quite happy with them. But I just, yeah, it's just you just want to make sure you're not too thin for when the games do start coming. You know, we are about to enter that period post-international break where you've got 2 games in a week. You know, you're playing Saturday, Tuesday and all that. So fingers crossed they get through it and it'll be all right.
But my feeling is that we're short. We are short of a left back because although Semmer played well on Saturday, he does love to get forward. But he's not really a left back. And Morris is young, and is he currently out injured? Presumably, but he looks
like Lewis.
And Lewis,
but Lewis
as well.
Hasn't played yet.
Yeah. No, so there's a couple of players who come in we haven't seen. Is that right?
But again, you say we're not short of left back. If we've got two in every position. We're just you can't have a backup and a backup and a backup. It's injuries. The weird bit was that we did sort of sign, you know, Lewis.
Isn't Semmer Martin's backup though, really? Rather than
Ken's everyone's backup. He'll go in goal, he'll go up front. You know, where do you want him? I'll go, he says, and he'll go and do a good job. Fact.
King Ken. Yeah. He did well. He did fine at left back. He did fine.
So we go into this international break now. I don't think we've got many players going away as before. I know Mr. Andrews is off for, maybe it's a training thing, I think, but he's going.
Yeah, and congratulations to him and his family for that. It's a hell of an achievement. Coming through the academy at Watford and getting into the England under 21s.
We've got seven players. Seven players have been called up for international.
Loser. Porteous, loser.
Kone.
So we've got Backman, Semmer, Chakvetadze. Porteous, Kayembe, and
loser.
Andrews.
Oh, not loser. Are they Morocco not playing?
Yeah.
Does that make you feel like he can't add another layer to what he's trying to develop there, Dave? Or is it just, it's all there, they just need a bit of a rest and that'll be the thing that'll get them to their 3 games in a row, their win?
It's just the way of the game now. You know, you'd expect to, if you're a decent team in the championship, you expect to have, you know, I would say 7 or 8 or more players going away in international duty. It's fine.
It's fine, says Dave. Hurrah.
thank you very much for listening to From the Rookery End. Of course, we'll be back with more podcasts very, very soon. But thank you very much, Colin.
Thank you, John.
Thank you very much, DCW.
Thanks very much. I said the other day on the WhatsApp group that it's absolutely no coincidence that Colin, a.k.a. the Brigadier, returns from his summer retreat and all hell broke loose. So long may it continue.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolute carnage is what we're asking for.
No nil all draws here.
No. Thank you very much for listening. Do tell your friends. Yes, come on, you all!